Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Shad Marquitz. We're your hosts for this weekend edition. Also your hosts throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, Corlin Economics Report. Now, a lot to talk about this week, even though it seemed to be a bit of a slower trading week. It was a shortened trading week in Canada. Very happy Canada Day to everybody in Canada. And it's going to be a shortened trading week next week due to July 4th. So very happy July 4th coming up to all our American listeners. There are a couple big picture themes that carry over to a wide range of different markets, sectors, and even can play into some of the economic data. So we're going to focus a bit more big picture here, and we're kicking off the show with Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. Now, Jesse, we have you on the show about every month. And one of the big developments from this last month has been interest rates. Look, we went through the Fed meeting this month and we saw rates in a way kind of skyrocket for at least the very short period of time. Entering this month, the 10-year came in a little under 3%, moved the whole way up to almost 3.5% within a matter of about 2 weeks, and then pulled back again to 3% and has maintained above this 3% level. Jesse, when it comes to interest rates and the general direction and trend, still seems like the trend is up. What are you seeing, though?
Yeah, absolutely. The trend is up. It's a very clear pattern on the chart of, you know, higher highs and higher lows. But from the way I look at it, momentum is clearly waning. We see, and you know, my friend Michael Oliver's, probably the best at measuring this. And he uses indicators like price relative to the 50-day moving average, price relative to the 200-day, those types of things. When you use that and you isolate momentum, you can see rates are making actually lower highs in terms of momentum, even as price is making higher highs. And so that's just a sign that momentum's waning. And I also use other technical indicators like DeMarc indicators, which are typically trend exhaustion signals. And we've seen several of those as well. I think the 30-year Treasury yield recently created a weekly DeMarc sequential sell signal. So there are a number of these momentum and exhaustion signals kind of showing up at the same time you have fundamental signals like the copper to gold ratio rolling over pretty significantly. I mean, if you just look at that alone, it suggests the 30-year Treasury yield could fall back to test, 2.5%, which would be a pretty big fallback in that yield. So you also have the cyclical to defensive ratio within the stock market has been relatively weak for months now. So these are all signs that are essentially pointing to the potential for recession, which would be bullish for the bond market and help rates come in a bit.
Well, Jesse, you mentioned there some of the weakness we saw in copper relative to gold, and we've also seen a really strong U.S. dollar. Off mic, you'd mentioned you thought that not just rates, but maybe the U.S. dollar may be topping out. Do you think that would give a lift to the commodity sector? Because for the last month or so, commodities have kind of gotten beat down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's been astounding, right, how strong commodities have generally been in the face of a rising dollar. So, yeah, I do think, that headwind of the dollar, rising dollar, could turn into a tailwind. The dollar is essentially flat in interest rates, too. So for the past, month or 6 weeks, they both kind of put in a peak in mid-May, sold off, rallied to a new high. That new high is kind of the one that I was watching carefully because it does show some momentum divergences in both rates and the dollar. The thing with the dollar, too, is, the strength in the dollar is largely the result of two things, I think. One, the Fed's hawkish turn over the past, 12 months. They've been clearly communicating, that they were going to stop easing and start tightening monetary policy. But I think the markets have probably fully priced in what the Fed plans to do. And as the prospect of recession grows more clearer in people's minds, it's going to become clear that the Fed is not going to be able to get to, I think Loretta Mester was talking about 3.5-4% sometime next year. And, rolling off $3 trillion off the balance sheet, that's just not going to happen. So, the dollar's priced in a lot of hawkish policy over the next several quarters. And to the extent that that's not able to come to fruition, it's going to be bearish for the dollar. The other side of the dollar has been kind of the safe haven trade. It's benefited from a risk off trade for the last, especially over the last 6 months. And so to the extent that that risk off trade is essentially run its course, the first stage of the bear market in stocks has potentially run its course. And we could talk about this a little bit more, but I do think we can potentially see more of a bear market rally extend for another month or two. That would also, that renewed risk on trade could also be potentially bearish for the dollar.
Jesse, how are other central banks playing into this potential topping then for rates and the U.S. dollar? Because look, other central banks are now catching up to the Fed in terms of tightening policy. And they're a bit earlier on because the Fed has been through a couple rate hikes now.
Yeah, well, there's, we could talk about the ECB and the Bank of Japan, right, which have been dramatically, it's not hard to see why the dollar's been strong when you consider inflation in Europe is at least as troublesome as it is in the United States. And we still have, negative interest rates in Europe. So, and the Bank of Japan is probably pursuing the most dovish policy in the history of central banking right now with, yield curve control in the face of rising inflation. But when you see extremes like this, right, for the dollar to continue higher, the divergence in central bank policy would probably have to grow, meaning the Fed would have to get more hawkish and ECB and BOJ relatively more dovish. And I just don't see that happening. I think, the potential for a rapid reversal in the yen is one of the things that could help the dollar reverse. The yen has been so weak, and rightfully so, with the Bank of Japan printing so much money to keep yields where they are, that, and there's so many speculators short the yen. I think it's, one of the biggest net short positions we've ever seen. So there's a potential for a reversal there in the yen and a major short squeeze. I don't think it would take much of a shift, even the slightest shift in policy by the Bank of Japan to create that. I think there's also, when you talk about the inflation dynamics, it's important to point out that the inflation dynamics in Europe are much more, are probably more supply side driven than those in the United States, which have a greater demand component than anywhere else. And so, I don't think the ECB probably needs to do as much as the Fed probably needs to do to really rein in inflation. And so for a close in that divergence, or kind of fixing that divergence between ECB and the Fed, it probably doesn't, like the Bank of Japan, require that much of a hawkish shift on the part of the ECB at all, to any great degree, to really create a more significant shift in the currency dynamics.
It's a good point, Jesse. And if we saw the ECB and the Bank of Japan just do those slight shifts and we saw a bounce in those currencies and the euro and the yen, that would probably bring the dollar down as well, just because it's a teeter-totter, the dollar versus those other six key currencies, the yen and the euro being the key ones. You put out an interesting piece this last weekend, and it was titled "Wealth Destruction Has Been Massive This Cycle." And it references a chart that you included from the Daily Shot. I'd love you to expand on that concept. And it also got a little into stagflation, some quotes from Ray Dalio. Love you to expand on that for our listeners here.
Well, yeah, it basically highlights just how big the stakes are for the Fed right now. This is something I wrote about in my market comment on Saturday or last Friday. And basically, because household net worth relative to GDP is so much bigger than any time in the past, the stakes of this game that Fed is playing are greater than anything we've ever seen. So, we really need to understand, focus, not lose sight of the fact that the Fed has used asset prices, specifically targeting asset prices to try and create a wealth effect in supporting the economy for a long, long time now, right? I mean, it goes back to Alan Greenspan cutting rates in the wake of the 87 crash. There was no economic justification for doing so other than supporting the stock market. And ever since then, it's gotten more and more significant. And now household net worth relative to GDP is so much bigger than it was in the financial crisis, so much bigger than it was in the dot-com mania. If you think about it in those terms, right? After the dot-com mania, right? Alan Greenspan was so worried that the crash in the NASDAQ was going to potentially create another Great Depression that he lowered interest rates to 1%, created the housing bubble. So the crash in the stock market in 2001, too, resulted in a decline in household net worth relative to GDP of about 20%, which, pretty large, right? That was kind of freaked out Alan Greenspan. In the great financial crisis, household net worth fell about 70% relative to GDP, or equal to 70% of GDP. And that created, right, the Great Recession. The decline we've seen already in markets, because household net worth relative to GDP is starting from such a high level, we've already seen a decline of 60%. So the decline, the damage to household net worth relative to the size of the economy has already been as big as it was during the financial crisis. And this is only as the Fed has just begun to raise interest rates. Inflation is still a problem. And I think it's just very important for investors to recognize that the Fed is still targeting asset prices and targeting inflation. They need to bring down the value of your retirement account in order to bring in inflation. That's how financial conditions work. One of the largest components is corporate spreads and stock prices. And so they need stock prices and spreads to continue, spreads to widen, stock prices to continue to come down in order to try and rein in inflation. And the way they do that is by raising interest rates and creating this wealth destruction, because these reverse wealth effects are really the only tool the Fed has in battling inflation right now.
So it seems like right now the Fed is, I guess, succeeding in what they set out to do. It just hurts the consumer, hurts the individual. Jesse, it sounds like the Fed's going to keep on doing this, though. And even when we hear comments about market weakness and what the Fed has to say, even now what the Fed has to say about inflation, they're admitting that it's running hotter and running longer, and even some of their inflation expectations are generally higher when you look a year out. It seems to me like the Fed's going to keep on destroying some of this wealth, some wealth that was created way too easily. Should this be what we continue to expect, is a general meltdown in assets, whether they're financial or hard assets?
Well, I think it's a fantastic question. And it's really the dilemma that faces the Fed is facing right now. Jay Powell, this is something I've been writing about literally for 2 or 3 years now, at least, that eventually this monetary experiment is going to present the Fed with a decision between what I've proposed is, deciding between the devil and the deep blue sea. The devil is we're going to create another crash in asset prices to try and rein in inflation. And I'm talking about a decline in stock market of 50 to 60%, or greater, God forbid. We've seen a 20% decline in the S&P 500, and it's created, a massive decline in wealth, household wealth relative to GDP already. So, to get where they need to go to rein in inflation, they might have to see a decline of 100% relative to GDP or greater, which is, you can just imagine how damaging that would be to the economy. But if they don't do this, right, they risk inflation expectations becoming unanchored, as they say. And, that is an inflation environment where you have a pattern of higher highs and higher lows in the inflation numbers. That means inflation could come down in a cyclical sense, but maybe it comes down from 8% down to 4%. and bottoms at 4 during a recession, but then just goes back up to 10 or 12 during the next cyclical upturn because they didn't do enough in this cycle to rein it in. And so I personally believe the Fed is not going to be willing to create a decline in asset prices significant enough to rein in inflation. They're not going to be, because they understand the consequences right now, right? I mean, you can just talk through, another 50, 60% decline in the stock market, would pension funds are already at, I mean, we've seen the greatest bull market, right, in history, 11 years and the greatest gain in that period. And pension funds are still underfunded. So the different crises that would materialize in the wake of another major crash in stock prices would create even bigger problems for the Fed. So I do think they are going to flip-flop again at some point. There's going to be, and I think it's when we really start seeing obvious signs of recession at the Fed. And markets are already, this is why I'm also bearish on the dollars. I think markets are already beginning to drop the terminal rate, the expected terminal rate of Fed funds, meaning we've already seen a peak in what markets are pricing into how far the Fed's going to be able to tighten. And so I think all of these things point to a very, very bullish case for precious metals over the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, Jesse, it's going to be interesting to watch this continued tug of war that the Fed is engaged in between fighting inflation, but trying not to rock the market so hard to the downside that they pull the economy into a recessionary period. We hear a lot of terms, recession, depression, inflationary recession, but we also hear stagflation. Stagflation, the ingredients are high inflation, which we have. Usually they were paired in the 70s with high energy prices, which we definitely have. Slowing growth, which we've seen in GDP estimates for the first quarter and the second quarter. And now we're starting to see the layoffs. Are we in a stagflationary period? And where do you think that takes us, if so?
Absolutely. I mean, stagflation is already here. We saw, first quarter GDP negative in real terms, but the underlying nominal numbers are still very strong. That's what stagflation is nominal numbers still look good, still look okay. But inflation is just running faster than retail sales, faster than consumers are able to spend. And so I think that's what stagflation is nominal looks okay, real looks not okay. After inflation. And that's where we're at. And I think what markets are missing is if you look at things like, five-year inflation forwards and 10-year break-even inflation and what markets are pricing in for inflation over a 5-10-year period, I think they're still dramatically underestimating the inflationary forces right now. And that bleeds through to all markets, right? It suggests that, dollar's way too high because the purchasing power of the currency is not going to be preserved as well as market participants believe. It means equity valuations are still way too high because earnings are going to be damaged by inflation. And interest rates are still too low because they're not anywhere close to compensating investors for what inflation is probably going to be over a 5-10-year period. So it kind of has effects throughout the entire markets. But I think most importantly, from where I'm sitting, it helps to explain why gold hasn't really taken off yet, because investors still believe that inflation is transitory. You look at any of these, imputed market-based inflation expectations, and they still say investors expecting 2.5% inflation over a long period of time. And when that changes, when market participants realize that inflation is going to be higher over the next 5-10 years than they currently expect, gold price will already be much higher by the time markets make that repricing in the bond market and tips and et cetera.
So in all fairness, the gold price has actually hung in quite well. And in this market environment, I think it's hard to expect anything, especially an individual commodity or asset, to fully buck the trend. However, oil, energy sector has done pretty well. But when we look at some of the other commodities here, Jesse, the other precious metal that we talk about a lot, silver, that is just hanging on to breakdown levels. We're recording this halfway through the day on Wednesday, and oh, silver looks like it, it's just holding on in that 20 and change region. But then last week we saw copper breakdown, and we've actually seen a little bit more weakness in general energy prices, including oil. What's this environment that just continues to push commodities down now? It seems, to your point, kind of a cash crunch that investors are facing.
I think it's important to make a distinction between secular forces and cyclical forces, right? So I think there are secular forces of inflation that are going to help play catalyst for a long-term bull market in commodities, precious metals, that'll last a number of years. I think, you know, if you think about this last bull market that we saw in financial assets, falling interest rates and rising valuations for software stocks and all these kinds of things, lasted a long time. And I think we're going to see something similar in commodities. But in the short run, we have these cyclical forces, right? So markets have spent the last 18 months or whatever pricing in inflation, rapidly recovering nominal growth and rapidly recovering price pressures. Now they're starting to wrestle with the potential for recession and the crimp to demand that's going to result in. And so that's what, you know, commodities and the bond market are both telling you right now, that interest rates aren't, you know, going up anymore. They've essentially flattened out for the past month. Commodities, aside from the oil price, are starting to roll over. And I think that's just absolutely a clear signs, in addition to all the other signs that we've seen for months and months now, that recession is coming. So I think in the short run, commodities potentially have some more downside in front of them as this, you know, recession trade continues, because I think we're going to get to the point where recession becomes obvious. The Fed is going to be forced to start talking about pausing. You know, they're probably going to raise 75 bips again next month, but then I think we could probably start hearing them talk about a pause at some time in the future. And you know, so over the next few months, we could see some commodity weakness through that process. But once we get through this kind of stagflationary recession, which I think nominal growth is not going to decline too much. I don't think it'll decline at all. I think it's only going to decline in real terms. And we starting to look through a recession towards the next cyclical upturn, because markets are pricing, you know, 6 to 18 months in advance. Once they start looking through that to the next recovery, we're going to see commodities pick up again. And I don't think they're going to retrace too much of their gains over the next couple of months here, but I do think they're still vulnerable to some short-term weakness.
Well, Jesse, just with regards to the precious metals, as a safe haven, you mentioned that when inflation expectations, I guess, get adjusted to a more longer-term view that they're going to be more than 2 or 2.5% and it's going to be persistently high, that could be a driver for gold. But, you know, a lot of times people say it's an inflation hedge, and then other pundits will say it's really not an inflation hedge. It's really a chaos hedge against the policies and monetary policies of the central banks and the fiscal policies of the government. Do you think that when people realize the recession is going to be there and maybe we see more of a potential stock market correction, that that's when more money will rotate into the safe haven of the precious metals? Because so far, while they've held their own ground, many people are disappointed at how they performed in light of what we've seen the last 2 years.
I think, you know, precious metals are a confidence trade, and so are stocks. I mean, so is so many of these things right now. Buying the stock market today is essentially just an expression of confidence in the Fed's ability to navigate, and buying bonds today, expression in the confidence in the Fed's ability to rein in inflation without doing too much damage to the economy. Essentially, you're betting on the Fed being able to create a soft landing, buying stocks and bonds today. Buying gold today is the other side of that trade, right? It's saying, I don't think they're going to be able to rein in inflation and not do damage to the economy. And so I think, yeah, it's the flip side. You know, it's like my friend Diego Perilla has written many times, if stocks and bonds are the bubble, gold is the anti-bubble. And I really think that it's going to become, over the next couple of quarters, it's going to become obvious that the Fed's hands are tied. They can't prop up the stock market and rein in inflation. They just can't accomplish both of those things. And so they're going to have to pick one. And I think they're going to pick propping up asset prices, because the cost of another massive asset price bust is just too great. And it's debatable whether they're even capable of propping up asset markets. I don't even agree with that premise, but they're going to have to try. And in trying, they're going to abandon the inflation mandate. And that's when people are going to say, oh, my God, none of us own enough gold. And that's, you know, where you're going to see, you know, in Elliott wave terms, I think the wave three of this gold bull market, I think what we've seen, you know, from waves one and two is just the kind of the opening chapter of this bull market in gold. And wave three is always the strongest wave of any five wave move. And I think that's what's ahead of us.
So then, Jesse, driving down to the stocks, look, there's no denying that a lot of investors, especially gold investors, invest in the stocks too for some added leverage, some added torque to their investment. These stocks have just been crushed. The majors have held up a little better, but the mid-tiers, the juniors, some of these stocks are down 80, 90% from some of their highs. Some of these stocks are trading for less than cash in the bank. Why haven't these stocks been able to at least get some support in your eyes?
Well, because I think they are, you know, there's the precious metals themselves, and then the stocks are, to me, just the best indication of the sentiment towards precious metals, right? So you can watch when the stocks outperform the precious metals, that's a sign that investors are getting more bullish. When they underperform, investors are getting more bearish. And to me, you look at all the signs in precious metals right now, from the performance of the mining stocks to the commitment of traders report to anything. And the bearishness is really significant. And to me, it's a very encouraging contrarian signal that it's time to be adding to positions and building these things up, because these are the types of opportunities you get very rarely in bull markets to buy into weakness at times when investors are really giving up on the trade. And I think that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, hopefully we are at that point, because we just keep on seeing kind of a meltdown in these stocks. And you look at GDX, GDXJ, SIL, which are the ETFs for gold and silver stocks. Man, they're also breaking down. So it's been ugly for a lot of these investors. Hopefully that changes soon. But I don't know, this summer still could be pretty tough. Jesse, thank you as always for your time, buddy. It's always interesting hearing what you're looking at, what the key drivers are in your eyes, in that more big picture sense. Hope you have a great rest of your week, Jesse. Thanks again for your time.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.